established that today is the king of knowledge. Sir, I have to tell me, what is knowledge? How do you define what is knowledge? There should be another mic available here, isn't it? Because this is an interactive meeting. Can get one? Yeah, please. Or what do you consider to be knowledge? Just tell me. If that is too abstract to explain, at least you tell me, whom would you consider to be knowledgeable? Yeah. Who has some information about something. Please tell me more precisely what kind of information. About? That means knowledge is of different. Yeah. About some particular field, isn't it? That means knowledge can be of various things in various fields. But at least according to Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, knowledge is very precisely defined. Lord Krishna says in the 13th chapter, 8th verse, of the 12th verse, what is knowledge? What is the meaning of knowledge? He's saying, Tamanitvam adam vidvam ahimsa shantirarjavam acharyopadanam shaucham sairyam atmavinigraha. He said, Amanitvam. Amanitvam means humility. Adam vidvam means pridelessness. That means not showing any dumba. Ahimsa, nonviolence. Kshanti, tolerance. Arjavam means honesty. Amanitvam adamitvam ahimsa shantirarjavam acharyopadanam. That is surrendering to your guru and following his instructions. Shaucham, internal and external purity. That is shaucham. Sthairyam, steadiness in life. Atma vinigraha, self-control. And then he says, Indriyartheshu vairagyam. That means one should have self-control. Anahankaram, evachan. That means one should not have any ahankar. Then he says, Janmamrita jaravyadi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Such a person should be able to see the suffering of birth, old age, disease and death. Then he says, Mahisananya yogena bhakti rajyabhicharani. And you should have devotional service to me, you should perform devotional service, bhakti to me. Mahisananya yogena ananya bhakti you should perform. And vipradesha savittam artha janasansati. You should avoid the bad company of people who are indulging in bad vices. And adhyatma jnana nityatvam. Tattva jnanartha darshanam. He should focus on adhyatma jnana, not just bhautik jnana, but adhyatma jnana. Tattva jnanartha darshanam. Eta jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yadatonyata. Eta jnanam, these are the different tenets of knowledge. One more thing he says in between, ishtan ishtopapatishu. He says, what is the beginning of it? You know that? Before that, Vayishan and Yogi, there is one more verse in between. There he says that such a person accepts whatever comes of his own accord. He doesn't endeavor for, I like this, I don't like this, I will acquire this. He is not greedy. And he is compassionate towards all living beings. So, yeta jnanam iti proktam. That means this is called as jnanam, Krishna says. Ajnanam yata tonyata. Other than all the other anya things are called as ajnanam. So these are the different things mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita to be knowledge. That means if somebody is considered knowledgeable, one should be exhibiting these qualities. Otherwise they cannot be considered knowledgeable. When Prabhupada went to the West, he saw many, many students from most famous universities like Massachusetts and other universities. So he went to Massachusetts to one of the departments and asked them, where is the department to teach the students about the knowledge of the soul? They said, oh, we don't have any department. We have none. And that is what Prabhupada found, that these students, even after so much education, they were simply a victim of their own senses. That they would come out with a very big degrees, like doctorate and MS and so many degrees. But then they were actually hunting for women, or they were found to be all the time drunken with high concentration liquors, or they were drug addicts, or they were addicted to the smoking habit. So every one of them had some vice or the other in Gopal Sadam. And they were simply a slave of the senses. A slave means one who has no freedom, and one who has to do what is forced upon him to do. That's the meaning of a slave. So their senses are practically demanding and making them dance like a toy, according to the dictation. So Prabhupada asked, what good is your education? You are getting such education from the college. But in our India, Prabhupada said, at least in our India, people are not so degraded. Prabhupada said, even a farmer working in a field knows about the laws of karma. When he sees another man's wife, he will fold his palms and respect. Because he treats everyone else as a mother. Because he knows, I should not indulge in any sinful activities that will ruin my future. Because every Indian knows that Prabhupada said. That means we are supposed to know that, if you don't know that. So, Prabhupada is telling, simply acquiring degree degrees from universities doesn't make one knowledgeable or educated. If you see, we are getting educated in our colleges, either about earth, like there is fire mechanics now, or about water, we study in hydraulics and fluid machinery, we study about air in turbo machinery and thermal engineering and all those subjects. We study about air and fire. There is a fire engineering separate branch now. We study about fire. Electricity also comes in that, electrical engineering. We study about ether. In physics, we study about acoustics. Or there are departments that study about mind and intelligence, like the psychology, psychiatric. And there are departments that study about ego, like parapsychology. People talk more about ego. But this is the department which speaks about soul and its relationship with God. There is hardly any. So all that we study is simply dead matter. That is why this knowledge is called as Jadavidya. Jadavidya means simply study of dead substances, dead matter. So modern science teaches us how to manipulate dead matter and try to adjust the sufferings in our life so that we can become apparently happy. See, this is simply adjustment. That means, see, the nature is so created by the Lord that if you try to adjust and escape from one suffering, that is going to manifest as another suffering. Because, for example, you are sitting in a classroom and you are not done your homework. So teacher wants to beat you with a stick. So you may escape from that, isn't it? But can you escape from the class permanently? You have to anyway return tomorrow. Report will anyway go to the teacher. That when you come tomorrow, you'll get two beatings tomorrow. That is how the material nature also works. If you try to escape in one way, then it comes in another way. In Bhagavatam, there is an example. It says that a lady was passing by in the forest carrying some logs of wood, And it was very painful for her. And a king was passing in a horse that side, and he asked her, "You want any help?" She said, please take this and keep it on this shoulder. This is too painful. So he took it and kept it on this shoulder. This is what science is helping us to do. What is science helping us to do? To shift your suffering from one point to another point and imagine that you have become free from it. Although we haven't actually become free from suffering. Can anyone give an example for this? Because you all know science more than me. How science gives apparent solution but it leads to another problem. That means the cure is worse than the disease itself. So I would like to have an example. You understood my point? The automobile example we gave in the last class, I think. So another example. Nuclear? Nuclear energy. So what does it do? Why did the man create this nuclear weapons or what? I need a little explanation, not just a point. Explanation. He is saying, always man desires to control another person, isn't it? But one country wants to gain control over another country. So he is saying that nuclear power helps us to gain control over other people very easily. Just by dropping one bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, very quickly we can gain control over the country. But then what are the after effects? The after effects are seen even after several decades. Because of the radioactive decay, people's bones are melting. Because of that, how much torture is it for the people living there? It's a very, very cruel thing. That's what Lord Krishna says. Yetam drishtim avastapya nashtatmano alpa buddhayaha. He is calling such people as alpa buddhayaha. They create such lethal weapons, nuclear weapons to destroy the whole world. They can't give life, but they only know how to destroy. Destruction is very easy, but creation is very difficult. So it only causes destruction, although it gives you some feeling of supremacy. Yes, we have conquered that kingdom. We can have rule over the whole country, but then you destroy so many people. That's a good example. Any other example? Oh, it's called antithesis. Really? Air condition? He's a doctor, authorized man. Yeah. This is what I told you, that one suffering you escape, it comes in form of another suffering. Actually, you see, there are innumerable examples for that. You see, we can never take a shortcut. I have given one of the examples in our book, Your Best Friend. In Gujarat, they found out some technique to extract more milk from the cows. Generally, cows would give, say, 1 or 2 liters milk, for example. They give some medicine to the cow, by which the cow gives 20 liters. How wonderful it is, huh? Science has found out that cows can give 10 times more milk if you give them some injection, particular injection. And so the farmers were very happy, and they started bringing the doctors to give the injection, and injection became a little costly. And they fought for it, that the injection cost would be less and all. And now they were all getting a lot of milk. But then when they're getting milk, they realize that this milk is actually not proper milk. It is simply the blood. It is like sometimes they have milk sucking machines, Then it sucks beyond the limits of the cow, then blood comes in that. Similarly, although it apparently looks like milk, that contains some germs which are very deadly for human beings and leads to very deadly diseases. So when the scientists came to know, immediately told the farmer, stop, no more injections. If people drink this milk, it leads to food poisoning and people die. But do you think farmers would stop? Why they will not stop? Money. Because they were making money for 2 liters, now they are making money for 20 liters, why will they stop it? So the injection was banned by the government, but still it started coming in the form of tablets and they were selling it underground. So you can go to shops and you can say some code and you can take the tablet and give it to the cows. And now still it's conveying now. So sometimes it appears that science is having some knowledge to do something fantastic. But there's other problems. Nowadays you can see tomatoes in the market. They are a little bit extra plumpy than any ordinary tomato, which means there is something wrong somewhere. They will appear so extra nourished. They look so plumpy, you cut it, you find only a hollow thing inside. There is nothing inside. Simply hollow. So modern man is going for so many artificial ways of creating, like they want quick grapes, They have made some manual which they put for getting the grapes very quickly. So the grapes, they come very fast, because they have put some medicine in that. But then the grape tastes simply like some water. Simply water taste. There is no sweetness in it. Because sweetness is the ingredient that has been brought up by God. You cannot force it in the nature. Like sometimes they take these banana bunches, and they try to put some smoke in that and try to sweeten it very powerfully. So they don't have a taste. Similarly, these grapes don't have any taste. But what they do? They give phosphate baths for that. So in the phosphate bathing, one of our devotees has seen with his eyes. He went to a grape orchard and saw that happening. So in that phosphate bath, what they do? They put saccharin. Saccharin? Saccharin is like pithi, that sweet sugar powder. So they evaporate it, and that goes and settles on the top of the grapes. That's why when you buy grapes in the market, you'll find them white. You've seen that? That is simply phosphate bearing. But saccharin coating is there. Why they do that coating? When you put the grapes in your mouth, it looks very sweet. And then the second taste that comes is only water. So initial taste is of saccharin, and the second taste is of the artificial grapes. Not artificial grapes, the quickly made grapes. So this is the condition of modern man today. He has knowledge for doing so many things. But then it has to bounce back on us. It will be certainly boom around on us. We cannot do justice when we do such things. So this is called as Jada Vidya, Avidya. Within the Vedas you find there is also something called as aparavidya. Aparavidya, like for example, say the knowledge of Vastu Shastra, that doesn't cause any harm to anybody. In fact, science causes a lot of harm, like we were discussing just now. We are eating saccharin instead of grapes. Or we are eating an empty tomato which likes like a very nourishing tomato. It is simply a... Actually, especially in modern times, you can give a million examples for this. Like many of us have seen this fruity, you know. So many times people think it's mango juice in their drink. But if you see, in many of those kind of fruity kind of things, they write, there is no fruit pulp or there is no fruit juice. So you may wonder, then how is it looking like fruit? So what they use is the starch. You know, starch comes from rice. When you cook rice, what settles in the top is called as that, you know, like sticky, semi-solid gum kind of thing. That is starch. And in that starch, they put mango, chemical mango flavor they put. So I asked them, why should they use starch? Why don't they use normal water at least? They use starch to cheat you that it is like mango pulp. Because the sticky feeling makes you think that it is mango pulp. So we don't know how old is that starch. It may be months ago and kept in the fridge. And they add some chemicals to that to give you simply a instant feeling that you are tasting a mango juice like that. So there are many drinks coming in the market like that. So these are all very disastrous to health. Even this rasna, concentrated, it will give. You can prepare 32 glasses in no time. And if you get big guests come to your house, but not good for health. So these things we find, this knowledge is called as jadavidya or avidya, which is only detrimental to our body, mind and soul. It's not good. Whereas aparavidya is not detrimental, it is good for your body. Like Vastu Shastra if you follow, or Ayurvedic medicine if you take, they're good for the body. They're all considered, they're all coming under aparavidya. So they are not avidya, they are aparavidya. But even that is not considered very high. And the real knowledge is called as paravidya. Paravidya is transcendental knowledge. That is beyond this world. The knowledge about the Atma, soul. Knowledge about God. And the relationship of soul with God. That is called as aparavidya. So, let us see what Krishna talks about what is real knowledge. So you see the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called as Rajavidya. Krishna says that Rajavidya Rajagushyam Pavitramiramuttamam Pratyakshavagam Amtharyam Susatam Kartamavyayam. Krishna is saying that, my dear Arjuna, the knowledge I am giving you in the chapter, this is Rajavidya. And Rajavidya Rajagushyam. Gushyam means Gupta, secret, topmost secret. Pavitra means very pure. Idam puttamam. Tama means andhakar. Puttama means beyond darkness. That means in the region of light or its pure wisdom. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. This can be practically experienced, my dear Arjuna. It's not just a theory. It can be practically experienced. That means susukam kartum agniyam. And it is happily performed. Joyfully performed. So this is the kind of Rajavidya that Krishna is speaking about in Bhagavad Gita. It is said, amongst all the living beings in the whole universe, there are many types of living beings. There are aquatics that are living in water. And there are birds that fly. And there are reptiles that live on the ground. And there are bees which move about on the land. And amongst the moving and non-moving like the trees, amongst the moving, the topmost elevated beings are the human beings who have the most elevated consciousness. You see, there are different levels of chetana. The lowermost one is avrita chetana. Then there is sankuchit chetana, mukullita chetana, vikasita chetana, and purna vikasita chetana. So, in the avrita chetana means completely covered over as such like a dumb thing. Sometimes tree, if you see, you know, trees are so dumb, you know, they don't speak. They don't move from place to place. There is Atma in the tree also. But they have very, very less consciousness. And above them, there is Avrita Chetana and Sankuchit Chetana, where the consciousness is very reduced, like animals. Mukula Chetana also. It may be a little more developed consciousness. But it is still lesser. But Vikasa Chetana is the human body, where the Chetana consciousness is little more developed. Like somebody tricks you with the pin, immediately you realize, it's jump up, isn't it? You prick a buffalo, give a pinch to a buffalo, do you think you realize? To a buffalo or a hippopotamus. If you give a pinch, only your finger will pain. If you give a pinch, you will pain, you will get pain. Instead of hippopotamus getting pain. Because the chetana is very, very less. Or you pinch a tree, that won't feel any pain. Because the chetana is very less. So, vikasi chetana is of a human being, and purna vikasi chetana is of a pure devotee of Krishna, Siddha Bhakta. He has a completely evolved consciousness. So, it is said, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving, teaching to Rupa Goswami, he was explaining all these things. He said, in the amongst the human beings, if you see, who are supposed to have developed consciousness, there are two categories of people. Those are called civilized, and those who are called uncivilized. So whom do you think is uncivilized, according to you? Can anyone say? Take up the mic. Where is the mic? Who is civilized and who is uncivilized? Those who don't know how to wear pants and shirt? Are uncivilized or what? They are called uncivilized. My Lord, very lofty statement. Somebody else? Yes? Now, he is saying those who don't follow the norms of society. Like, example? Traffic laws. That means, he is saying, whatever is accepted by the whole society, if one doesn't follow that, then it's called uncivilized. Good things. Oh, good things. Problem is to define what is good. Good is such a broad term. I would like to have a little more precise answer. Certainly you are correct. But it has to be a little more precise. Yeah.
Cultured.
Cultured, very good. Yeah. You all are actually coming to the answer indirectly. Something that is more accessible to majority of the people. Since we are living in a fool's paradise, majority are going to be fools. So accepting them and following in their footsteps can be considered to be civilization. And that is what is considered civilization in the modern times, at least. In the modern times, if you know how to wear a coat and a suit and a tie, sometimes one tries to wear a tie, it chokes your neck. People may think he's not a very civilized man, he doesn't know how to wear a tie. So if you know how to wear a tie, how to wear a cap and a cooling glass and shoes, nicely polished, and you know how to shake hands, then you are considered a civilized man in modern times. But at least according to the scriptures, such people are not considered civilized. Yeah? Those who follow dharma, very good. This is one of the aspects of civilized life. Now, I'll tell you what exactly the scriptures say about civilized life. They say those who have faith in God, and those who follow the scriptural injunctions, and those who are clean in their habits, they are called as Arya. They are called as actually Arya. Arya are civilized people. And those who do the opposite are called as Anarya or uncivilized. That means those who don't have faith in God, those who don't follow God's laws, instructions given by God, and those who live unclean lives, they are called as uncivilized. That is why we see there are people who are uncivilized. But amongst them, there may be very educated people and uneducated people. Similarly, there may be very strong people, politically strong or monetarily strong, and there may be weak people. But all of them come under uncivilized category. Krishna speaks about them in Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter. He is saying, Tavrittincha nivrittancha jana navidurachara nasacham nabichacharo nasacham teshu vidyate. These people, they do not have cleanliness. Noisy wonder. You don't have cleanliness. You go to the computer cafe and see how clean they are. You are calling them uncivilized. So this is simply a make-show cleanliness. Their hearts are full of dust. It is simply a externally they are showing cleanliness. One of our boys who was working in Singapore told me he is working in a software company in the top. So those people in the evening they come down and down they have like something like a juice bar. But in the juice bar, do you know what is being sold? Blood of different animals. So they work in such clean atmosphere in the computer office, and they come down, they drink juices of blood of different animals. So what kind of cleanliness is that? Tell me. So the hearts are not clean. Not only that, such people, they hardly go to temple. But when they go to computer room, they remove the shoes very nicely and put the thoughts there and enter the room as the computer is a deity. So they are just conscious. So they worship only the deity of computer. They don't have anything beyond that. So such superficial cleanliness is not accepted as cleanliness. If one goes little deeply, you will see how much these people are unclean. They have sex at any time of the day. Whenever they get opportunity, they have sex. They have sex with anybody. But according to Shastra, one shouldn't have sex in the twilight, in the evening hours, like Diti and Kashyapa. Because Diti demanded, they had sex at the evening hours. And do you know who was born? Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were born. So in Kali Yuga, they are creating many Hiranyakshas and Hiranyakashipus because they have sex any time in the day. So many such great demons are being born because of freedom like that. And in the name of giving freedom to women, they have pre-mixing. So they can be considered clean according to Shastra. That's why he says, Nashavacham, Nati Kacharo. No Achar. No Achar means they don't know proper codes of behavior. How to behave. So according to Shastra, a man should treat another man's wife as a mother. And he should try to treat another man's wealth to be like garbage. That means you would never put your hand into garbage dump and take out something to eat. Similarly, you should never want to swindle another man's property. And also the code of civilized behavior means you should treat other people exactly as you want to be treated by them. So the modern times you see people don't follow this code of conduct. That is, America people have 14 partners, 14 life partners. And there is one man runs with another man's wife. It's very common. Or they are always finding out ways and means how to swindle another man's property. Like the credit card system is a very expertly designed system to make you bankrupt, to completely swallow all your money. That is a credit card system. Because credit card, when you have, you just don't realize how the money is going out of your hands, isn't it? Because they tell you, oh, you can take a table on credit, chair on credit, you can have a computer on credit, you can have mixie on credit, grinder on credit, you can have a car on credit, you can have even your clothes on credit. Ultimately, you find that in order to fulfill the amounts you got through credit, you have to work another 30 years with a reduced salary, with a meager salary. So in this way, we find, although apparently modern man posed as a civilized man, Krishna says, Nashavacham Napi Chacharo, Nasatyam Teshu Vidyate, they are liars, he's saying. So this is not civilized. Such people are not considered civilized beings. But according to Shastra, one who follows the laws of God given in scriptures, follows the Varnashrama Dharma, and follows this, whatever is given, like Brahmana follows reading the scriptures, teaching scriptures. Similarly, performing yajna and teaching people how to do yajna. And living only on charity. He just accepts charity. Charity and salary are not the same. They are different. You don't accept any paid salary. You just accept charity and you live. And people give you charity because they see that you are God conscious. So they give you charity. Similarly, Kshatriya does his dharma, Shudra does his dharma, Vaishya does his dharma. It's a very big subject to discuss. But to put it precisely, once you follow the principles of dharma given in the scriptures, to be called a civilized. And it is said, such civilized people are supposed to perform yajna, dana and tapa for purification. The only goal of our life is purification. Our heart is now full of dirt and dust, contamination. Purification is the goal of life. So Prabhupada says that there are many people who claim to be Christians or Muslims or Hindus, but they don't perform yajna, dana, tapa. You know the meaning of yajna, dana, tapa? Yajna means you should perform some activity like chanting the holy name, chanting Hare Krishna or performing fire sacrifice to glorify God. And dana means you should give in charity to others. Tapa means samastriti. So why do we perform all these things? Everything has a deep meaning in the scriptures. So when you perform yajna, you put so many grains in the sacrifice. You put so much ghee and silk and everything. And the Shastra says that when you perform such yajna, all the ingredients you put, they all go to Vishnu, the Supreme God. So you chant, Indraya Swaha Idam Namama. This is not mine. This is for Indra, and Indra will pass it to Vishnu. With that understanding you put it. So why do we do that? By doing that, one becomes detached from the hardened wealth. We have earned a lot of money and we want to enjoy our senses. But when you operate in the operations of fire, then it goes to Vishnu. Just like you give some money and a money order to the post office, then you go to your uncle in Delhi. The money goes. Same way, you, whatever ingredients you put, that is called as mouth of Vishnu. It goes to the Lord Vishnu. So by performing yajna, we become purified. Similarly, dana, giving in charity. Why do we give the hard-earned wealth in charity to others? Like poor people or brahmanas. Why do we give in charity? Because if you have extra money, suddenly we will do some nonsensical activity. You will think, now I have so much money, what to do? And immediately mind tells you, why not do this nonsense? So there's a possibility to fall down, a prey to bad habits. So one gives up in charity the excess money stand. And similarly, tapa, voluntary acceptance of certain sufferings in order to be grateful for what God has given us. Like for example, yesterday was Ekadashi day. On Ekadashi day, devotees generally avoid eating grains. They eat only fruits and milk. So if you eat only fruits and milk, that day you realize your stomach is so hungry. Then you understand, my God, although I am an electronics engineer working with so many chips and capacitors and resistances, or a mechanic engineer working with nuts and bolts, none of these things can satisfy my stomach. Unless God gives me some fruits and, you know, some grains. One day without grains is so difficult. So you become grateful to God. Or some people do Nirjala Ekadashi. Even avoid drinking water. Then you realize how important is water for your system. You get to know. So this Yajnadana Tapa should be performed not whimsically, but according to the direction given in the scriptures. Like that. Even the great kings who perform Yajna and give lots of charity to people. And other people, householders, will do charity and to a small extent. Whatever they earn, they would give a portion of it for God's service like that. So, if one does yajna dana tapa seva bhavanani manishinam, they all become purified. But millions of lifetimes, when you do perform yajna dana tapa, then such a person, after million lifetimes, begins to think that I am not this body, I am spirit soul. So all of you must have performed it a million times in a previous life. But so you have come to the knowledge that I am not this body, aham brahmasmi. I am not this body, I am brahmasmi, I am pure spirit soul. So one gets a realization. It's very, very rare realization. To understand. Prabhupada would say the whole world is in bodily consciousness. Everyone thinks I am this body. I am an Indian, or I am American, or I am fat, I am black, I am beautiful, I am ugly, I am an engineer, I am a doctor. These are upadhi. You know upadhi? Upadhi means designations. These are upadhi. So, after many, many lifetimes of doing yajnadana tapa, you become a very, very punyavan, pious man. Then you come to the point of understanding, I am not this body, I am pure spirit soul. You all must have learned the example of car and the driver, isn't it? You are like the driver, and the body is like the car. So you have different type of bodies. So one becomes a jnani, he understands that the body that I have now is actually tailor-made according to my previous desires. I desired in my previous life that I should have a body where I can accomplish these different desires. And a suitable body is given to you, every one of you. The body that you have, the kind of eyes, the nose, the tongue, the ears, and the mentality that you have, and the sweetness or the harshness you have, or the different traits that you have, the psychology that you have. Some of them are introverted, some of them are extroverts, some of them are outspoken. So different qualities you have, all these things are actually designed at the time of your birth. That's why even doctors don't know, you know, when a mother becomes pregnant, it's all like liquid inside, you know. And then it becomes like semi-solid, and then gradually, you know, hands start coming, the fetus develops, hands come, legs come, eyes come. Scientists are stunned how the child grows in the mother's womb. Because they know that something is happening, and that what is happening is not just haphazard, but something very definite and well-designed and happening very wonderfully inside the mother's stomach. How the hands grow, legs grow, eyes grow, all grow. These are all well-designed, things grow. So scientists are simply watching it, that's all. You cannot make such a thing. So it's a great miracle. But these are all offered by the Prakriti, middle nature, with a body like that. So a person who is a jnani understands, I am not this body, I am the soul, I am suffering in this body. I am suffering old age, I am suffering disease, I am suffering death. And there is cycle of birth and death again and again. I have to take body again. I have to die again. So he realizes. So there are jnanis like that who realize that after millions of lifetimes are performing again and another birth. But then, out of thousands of such jnanis, Krishna says, one or two or three of them probably may know that Krishna is God. Just one or two of them. That is what he said. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayanah sudurlabha prasantatma kotishwari mahamune. You all can repeat after me. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayanah sudurlabha prasantatma kotishwari mahamune. He is saying, Muktanam means liberated souls, Ata Siddhanam, those who achieved the Siddhis. Muktanam, Siddhanam, Narayana, Parayana. Out of these Muktas and Siddhas, those are worshippers of the Supreme God, Krishna, Narayana. Out of them, he says, Sudurlabha, he is saying. Durlabha means rare. Sudurlabha means very rare. Prashantatma, the most peaceful and happy people. Prashantatma, Kotishwati, Mahamune, he is one out of crore. Saint Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam Sahasreshu Kashit Yadati Siddhaye. By the Rajana, out of thousands of men, only one endeavors for knowing the truth. Every one of you here is sick, is the seeker of truth. So suddenly you are one out of thousands. So he is saying, Manushyanam Sahasreshu Kashit Yadati Siddhaye. And then he says, Yatatamaka Siddhanam, out of such people who are endeavoring for truth, out of thousands of them, only one knows me perfectly. Krishna says, even there are many, many who are endeavoring, but not everyone knows. How much 1 by 10 to the power of? How much? 6. That is the ratio of one who knows Krishna properly. So, this is considered the topmost knowledge of knowing Krishna perfectly, becoming a Krishna Bhakta. So, there are three aspects of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman is the impersonal aspect. God is simultaneously personal and impersonal. Just like this bulb. Bulb has a personal form. But the light pervading the entire hall is impersonal. Or the sun is reflected in one part of the universe. It has a form of a globe. But the light that is pervading the entire universe is impersonal. You all understand this point? Similarly, the personality of Godhead is called as Sri Krishna. He is Bhagavan. And the Kanti or the Prakash, or the light coming from his body, is called as impersonal Brahman. That is explained in the Brahma Samhita. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda kotiyo kotishva sheshava sudadi vibhuti bhinnau tad brahma nishkalam anantama shesha bhutam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. Yasya prabha means prakash. Prabhavato jagadanda kotiyo. In that impersonal Brahman, there are crores of Vaikuntha lokas floating. Crores of planets. Just like in material sky, there are many planets floating, right? Similarly, in the spiritual sky, there is Brahma Jyoti, and many, many planets are floating there. Kotishva shesha vasudadi vibhuti bhinnam tat brahma nishkalam anantam ashesha bhutam. And that nishkal, pure Brahman, where does it come from? Govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajam. It comes from the body of Govinda, he says. So Lord Krishna is the core or the origin of Brahman and Paramatma also. You have heard of Paramatma? Paramatma is the one who is seated in the heart of every living being. By the side of Jivatma. Jivatma is not Paramatma. Some people say Atma also Paramatma, they say. So they imagine that Paramatma and Jivatma are ten. But in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna clearly says that I am different from Jivatma. Jivatma is there in every body. I mean, in your body there is Jivatma and you know your body only. But Paramatma knows all the bodies and he is present in all the bodies. Just like a king allots, you know, one small patch of land to one farmer in his kingdom. But a king is the owner of all the lands, correct? So, my Paramatma, he says, Kshetrajnam Chapi Mahamiti Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. I am there in all the bodies. Whereas, you as a Kshetrajna is present only in your body. So, Atma and Jivatma, Jivatma and Paramatma are sitting side by side in this body. Huh? And that Paramatma is actually the Vishnu form, Vishnu Murti form, according to the Shastras. It is explained, the Vishnu who holds the Shankh Chakra Gada Padma, சசங்க சக்கரம் சகீட குண்டலம் சதீத வஸ்திரம் சரசீர சச்சனம் சஹார வக்ஷஸ்தர சோதி கௌஸ்துபம் நமாமி விஷ்ணு சரசா சதுர்புஜம். So Krishna expands himself as Paramatma. That's right. Owner of a company need not run the company himself. Do you think a owner of a company has to go every day to the company? Not necessary. Like if you go to telco company and ask him, where is Tata? I want to meet Tata ji. But you won't find him there. They will say, maybe he is in Switzerland or he has gone to Sweden for a pleasure trip. And who is running the company? Some managing director is running the company. Similarly, Krishna doesn't have to take this hard task of going with the soul from one body to another body and guiding them. So Krishna expands his Paramatma into the heart of every living being, and the, he's called a super soul. We are called a soul, and Paramatma is called a super soul. So God can be understood in three aspects, in impersonal aspect, and then in personal aspect is Paramatma, then higher than that is Bhagavan, who is the source of Paramatma and Brahman both. Just like when you see a mountain from a distance, when you're going in the train, the Prabhupada was showing his disciples in Los Angeles, mountains, they appeared like a hazy cloud, you know. You couldn't see anything beyond a cloud. But when the train goes more closer to the mountain, then you see, yes, mountain has so many details, like there are trees, there are plants, there are birds, so many living beings are living in that. When you go even much closer, you see there are so many human beings living, cottages are there, there is smoke coming, people are cooking at home. So you get a better and better perspective of the same truth. Similarly, it is said, Bhagavanti tattattva vidat tattvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti shabdite. It's saying that Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan are all aspects of the same one supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Jai Sri Radha Panjivyari Bhagavanti. Jai Goswami Bhagavanti. So, Guhya Jnana is to know that I am not the body, I am the Atma, soul. And Guhya Tara Jnana is the understanding of Paramatma. And Guhya Tama Jnana is to know Bhagavan. You understand these three points? Guhya, Guhya Tara, Guhya Tama. And here in the ninth chapter of Krishna tells Arjuna, Idam Tute Guhya Tamam. All of you repeat. Idam Tute Guhya Tamam. So Krishna doesn't say Guhya Taram. And he doesn't say Guhya. Idam Tute Guhya Tamam. Pravakshyami Anasuyave. Jnanam Vijnana Sahitam. Yajnatva Moksha Shaya Shukhat. Idam Tute Guhyatamam Pravakshyami Anasuyave. My dear Arjuna, I am giving you the Guhyatama knowledge. That means the top of knowledge. What is the Guhyatama Jnana? Yes? Which Jnana is that? Is it not about Brahman? Or Atma? Not Atma Jnana. Yes? Bhagavan, exactly. And to know Brahman is Guhya Jnana. To know Paramatma is Guhyatara Jnana. To know Bhagavan is Guhyatama Jnana. So Lord Krishna says, in this ninth chapter I am giving you, even to the Guhyatamam Pravakshyami. I am giving you knowledge about myself, my dear Arjuna. Krishna gives detailed knowledge there about himself. So, if one knows Krishna, then he knows everything. That's what Krishna says. If one knows God, then he knows everything. He doesn't need to know anything. But what we study in our everyday life is something which has no connection to Krishna. That means they are teaching us something that is outside of everything. What is outside of everything? What is outside of everything? Nothing. So what they are learning is that's why called as avidya. It's nothing actually. If one knows Krishna, then he knows everything. That is why it is said, one should cultivate systematically the knowledge of soul and God and the relationship and reinsert oneself in that relationship. Otherwise, all this endeavor that we put into the material world, simply for purposes, no? Penny and shillong. Simply earning money, making pounds and shillong. That is the culture, this modern culture. How to accumulate more money, how to have a comfortable house, how to get all the comforts for happy living. That even a rat is doing, isn't it? You see a rat, That makes a hole in the house. Now he thinks, now I have a nice home. There's no problem now. And then he has to worry for his bread. Then he goes here and there and brings a piece of bread and puts it inside the house. Now he has eatable also. So he doesn't have to worry about kapra. He has to worry about only roti and makan. So he has got that. Now he is very happy. Now I can live peacefully. There is no problem. Now I assimilated for another 3-4 days. Then he will produce some children. And then he also showers love to the small offspring. Offspring that. So human beings can never claim that, you know, it is only we who show love to our children. Even a tiger shows love to the cub, you can see. Even a lion shows love to the offspring. And even they have a den, they have a house, they have a hole. Beginning from a rat up to Brahma, everyone has a residence and everyone has society. And they are, even bees, honeybees have a wonderful society, better than ours. They never go on strike. They always work very cooperatively. So, mankind is proud of all this knowledge that we have, sociology, we have civics, and we have advanced you know, technology to have better eating and better sleeping and better mating and defending. Himself. And we should re-establish our connection with God, and we can also love Him as His other devotees love Him. That is actually called the king of knowledge. That's why Krishna says, Raja Vidya. It is not just ordinary Vidya, it is Raja Vidya, Raja Vidya, Raja Gushyam. You may say, what is this Gushyam? Secret. The Bhagavad Gita book is open. I can take it from the market and read it. What's the problem? Bhagavad Gita, there are more than 800 editions in the market. Do you know? There are many pandits and scholars, and one of the goals of a pandit is to somehow or other write some commentary to Bhagavad Gita before they die. People make it a policy that I am such a great Chaturvedi. I have to write some commentary, whether I know or not, I have to write. So people write some commentary like that. There are 800 versions of Bhagavad Gita in the market, if you see. But hardly any of them turn somebody into a devotee. Because, you know, it's very easy to open Bhagavad Gita and read it, but you still won't understand. That's why, if you know, many, many things in a computer. You say, no, recently I took a course on Java, no, I know PageMaker, I know this, I know that. You may know so many things in a computer. And I may be very proud of it. But if you don't know the password, can you do anything in the computer? As soon as you put on first, it asks for the password. Similarly, one has to go to God. First thing will ask you, you want entry to spiritual world, but who is your guru? Which is your parampara? God will certainly see that. Because God's mercy follows the mercy of a devotee. So Krishna has made it a standard policy. Like if you go to a wholesale dealer directly, he will not give you his commodity. What will he tell you? Go to the retailer. You have seen that? Because he is already distributing to big, big retailers, and you have to get your commodity only from them. Similarly, Krishna has made a policy to always give his mercy through his devotees. So Bhagavad Gita cannot be understood by anybody and everybody simply by reading the Sanskrit verses. So one has to get the guidance of a devotee. Like Srila Prabhupada, the recent times, you see, just a few decades ago, before he wrote commentary to Bhagavad Gita, before Prabhupada wrote commentary to Bhagavad Gita, there were so many Bhagavad Gitas in the market. And Bhagavad Gita had already gone abroad also. But you know where were those Bhagavad Gitas and other spiritual books lying? Because those who wrote them, they didn't have the Guhya Tama Jnana. They had either Guhya Tara or Guhya Jnana. They knew only about impersonal Brahman. There are so many Swamis from India who went to America and preached that God is impersonal and you are the God, I am God, everyone is God. So people did not find any taste in reading the scriptures. People thought, now what is the point in going to some impersonal God and who cannot be perceived, who cannot be seen, who has no hands and no legs, somewhere far away. Better that you get some pleasure in your TV that is available at home. You can see some farms, you can have some nice enjoyment. So people are not interested in hearing about God because nobody is interested in the impersonal of God, and that's what was preached to them. Many Swamis came from India and preached, and nobody trans on at all. And all their books were lying in libraries completely covered with dust. And if you go to some Theosophical Society or some library, you take out a book and like if you have to dust the book and you have to read, books have become old. And you open a book and see nobody has taken it. That's how the books were. Maximilla wrote so many volumes and volumes of Purana description. All his description is simply arising from his fertile brain, mental speculation. So nobody got any benefit from that. But then Prabhupada wrote this Bhagavad Gita as it is. And then he went abroad and preached it. Just within 3 or 4 years, that produced thousands and thousands of devotees. It was like, there's a book called Hare Krishna Explosion. That's a book written by Hayagriva Maharaj. That's a book, Hare Krishna Explosion. Within 3-4 years, literally thousands. Now, ISKCON has got more than 1 million followers worldwide. Millions of followers practicing the philosophy taught by Srila Prabhupada. And he taught it's a practical philosophy. Krishna says here, Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam, he says. That means, this can be practiced and realized. It is not simply like in a paper. So, for example, give the example, Jnanis, they go to Himalayas and try to do penance and impersonal God. But their meditation is like, they are trying to understand Bhagavad Gita. You know what is it like? It's like somebody trying to lick the honey from the bottle, honey bottle from down. You take a honey bottle and lick it, and you get a taste of honey? You cannot, unless you open the bottle and you pour it. So opening the bottle and pouring honey in your mouth is the part of bhakti. In bhakti, not only do you say that aham brahmasmi, I am soul, but you act on the platform of soul. What do we do? We act. That means we behave on the platform of soul. The nature of the soul is to love Krishna and serve him. So in the spiritual world, there are millions of devotees who are singing Krishna's name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. So they are chanting, they are dancing, they are playing instruments, they are sharing prasad with Krishna. You can see here, they are playing with Krishna, herding the cows and calves. So the innumerable gopis, innumerable gopas, this is spiritual sky. Spiritual sky is not a dreary void, simply like a dead stone or like a light. Light is there, Brahman is there, but the core of Brahman is the spiritual world. Tasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda kotim. Koti shvashesha. Vasudhani vibhoti dinnam. Many, many Vasudhani planets. Many, many planets are there, which are Vaikuntha planets. Where there is no birth, no voltage, no disease, and no death. And Prabhupada thought about spiritual world, and thought about Krishna consciousness, and people became enlightened. And Americans, Canadians, Europeans, and British men, all kinds of people, they took to Krishna consciousness. When Prabhupada went to the Great Britain, which is not so great now. Once upon a time it was called Great Britain. So Prabhupada went there, immediately people asked him, why have you come here? So Prabhupada told them, you people came to India and you were ruling us for so many years. And you practically plundered our whole country, took away all the opulence of India. But you forgot one thing. The most precious of all the jewels, you forgot to carry. What is that? The Vedic wisdom. I have come here to give you that. I am not a beggar to beg you anything from you, he said. So Prabhupada went to give this Vedic wisdom to the Britishers. And there today we have this Bhaktivedanta Manor, where about 40,000 people come for Janmashtami program. 40,000 people attend Janmashtami program. The crowd became so much, the car traffic became so much, that all the neighborhood people put a case on ISKCON. But you know, these people are having so much traffic and so much noise. Now the government has allotted them a land behind the temple, a big land to park their cars during Janmashtami. So in this way, you see, when the lid of the wisdom is open, free for everyone to understand, that the whole world can become Krishna conscious. That is real knowledge. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susakam kartumadayam. Our knowledge is not a knowledge that leads us to dry life. Like if you go to Vipassana meditation, I don't know how many of you have done it. One boy told me, he went to Vipassana people, they told him that you have to leave everything behind and come to a remote place in the outskirts of the city. And they told him, you should not speak one word. For 10 days you cannot speak. You have to keep your mouth shut. And every day, before going to bed, they will give you one carrot to eat. That's all. For 10 days. So this boy went and second day he came running back. He made his escape from the class, from the prison, come running back. So there are some people, they are actually a part of Buddhism. This is Prasanna. So they are teaching how to control the senses, but this is not the way we should control. In ISKCON, how do we teach control of senses? We control the tongue by offering food to Krishna first and then we eat it. Because we are not enjoying all Krishna's property for ourselves. First we give it to him, take his permission, then we eat that prasad. So everything we do, the nature of the soul is to dance. So we dance for Krishna's pleasure. Everything you see in Krishna consciousness is dovetailed in Krishna's service. One photographer has clicked a photo of two Buddhist monks who were sitting on a treetop and looking at a cricket match. So they have clicked this photograph and written in the newspaper. Even monks appreciate cricket. They are written like that. But when I saw the picture, I laughed at it. We said, our monks have no time for cricket. Why to speak of the monks inside our temple, even people living in our bases and in our colleges, even they don't have any time for going to see cricket because they are busy in service of Krishna. So these Buddhist monks, why they were watching cricket? Because they had nothing to do. If you say that don't speak, don't eat anything, and live a life that is a dry life, the people get bored in that. And they escape from the ashram and they will be going and looking at the cricket or the movie. But in Krishna consciousness, we have this wonderful literature of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is full of descriptions of transcendental activities of Krishna. So many wonderful pastimes. Nectar and pastimes of dealing with Krishna with his devotees, and how devotees deal with Krishna, and how devotees have wonderful qualities. By reading this literature, our heart becomes surcharged with spiritual vibration. And we can distribute it to others' benefit, and our whole life can go on simply hearing about Krishna, chanting his name, singing his glories, and leading a pure life that brings about satisfaction and happiness to our heart. So this is real knowledge. And this is the king of knowledge. And we should distribute this knowledge for the benefit of everyone around us. I would like to conclude it here today, because I have to go to Bombay, I have to rush to Bombay for 9:57. Maybe I can take questions for 5 minutes, if anybody has questions. Yeah, to the mic. Speak loudly.
Prabhuji, will you explain details, levels of Chetna?
First one is called Avrita Chetana. Avrita Chetana means completely covered over. It is said there are even some stones in which there is Atma, some Jivatma present sometimes. Like there are some growing stones. You have seen? You heard of growing stones? Some snails have life. Snails proper. But there are some stones, like in South India, there is a place called the Sushindra. Because there is a deity of Hanuman, which has grown more than 1.5 times in size. There are some growing stones like that. So sometimes Atmas are trapped even in stones, the stones which grow. So that is called Avrita Chetana. And then Sankuchit Chetana means the plants. Plants have a Sankuchit means curtailed consciousness. Sankuchit Chetana. Then Mukullita Chetana means like a bud. You know, bud? Flower bud. Closed. So Mukula Chetana is like the animal. And Vikasi Chetana is human being. And Purna Vikasi is the Chetana of a devotee. A devotee's consciousness becomes completely wide open. And he achieves what they call as love agape. They call it. Love agape means love for every living being, which comes as a result of love for Krishna. And love, when one loves Krishna, then one will love every living being automatically.
Prabhuji, whether Purna Vikasi Chetna is for only devotee or pure devotee?
That is for a pure devotee. So now we are in between from a Vikasi to Purna Vikasi. We are in between. Vikasi is for any human being. Purna Vikasi is for a pure devotee. So all of us are in between. That means our consciousness is gradually blossoming. Actually, you can see this even in a devotee's life. If you travel in a train, you see all the people, their faces are all full of stress. You see? Very dull and. If you travel in the train, you find people, because it is not a developed consciousness. People have so many kinds of sufferings in their life, lamentations, and they are always very morose. But when one becomes a devotee, it is said, Prasanna Chetasho Shashu Buddhi Pariyavadishtate. Krishna says. He says, when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, then all his anxieties dry up completely. Vishoshana Matsudaram, they all dry up completely. Then this devotee can be very happy. So the prasanata means blossomed, fully blossomed consciousness. So this is called as flowering of consciousness. Gradually flowers from a bud to a fully blossomed flower. Only a pure devotee is the happiest person in the whole creation. There's no worries, no lamentations. Because he doesn't act on the bodily platform, he acts on a spiritual platform as a servant of Krishna. So I have completed this knowledge today. So I'll tell one devotee to do Kirtan Parvati, maybe 10 minutes. I'll pack up and leave now. Thank you very much for showing Sasati Gardenance. Today I was a little doubtful whether we will have Sasati Gardenance. Because we have 33 boys in the camp, yoga camp. So we have yoga camp going on. I thought that so many have gone that probably many men have come today. So it's very nice that you all have come. How many of you have not undergone the yoga camp till now? Put up your hands. You have not come to the yoga camp held in the weekends? Okay. So you all are most welcome to join this camp. Avinash, can you call Shamrukh Prabhu? Bharatan Tui can call him. So you all are welcome to join the camp. He will be helped for another 2-3 more weeks, I think. So if you undergo the camp, there are so many correct lectures and all, you will learn many good things. And you will get a good foundation for your philosophy. And you also, after you learn the philosophy, you learn many practices. How to sing the songs, you learn. How to chant japa, you learn properly. Then about Hare Krishna chanting also, you learn more. What is the chanting? Why should we chant? Why not do meditation? So you learn many good things when you come to camp. And you see many video shows about other concentration in other parts of the world. So those of you who haven't come for the camp, please join the camp and take advantage. Shabu, Kidu Kirtan? Kidu Kirtan, I'm packing up and rushing now. Come here. Srila Prabhupada Ki?
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama,